Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Startopia Radio.
Good morning. I'm Michael Lauer, and this is Startopia Radio, where we highlight the upcoming startups in the Atlanta area. We have a great show for you guys. Later on, I'm sure you've had one, but we'll have Stephen Karsh with King of Pops on. But first, we have Daryl Dillinger. How you doing, man?
Great. How are you?
Doing well, man. So tell me a little bit about you and starting your company and what you guys do.
Well, our company is Raving Brands, and we are a franchise company based here in Atlanta. And in the past, we've had several different franchise companies that we've started, owned, and operated. Today, currently, we own and operate the Flying Biscuit Cafe, which has 13 locations around the southeast, and Monkey Joe's Parties and Play, which is a kids' indoor entertainment center, which has almost 60 locations all across the country.
So how does this kind of work? Does a startup or someone who wants to franchise come to you? Do you go to them? Where's the kind of mix in that?
Well, it's a little bit of both. We certainly, with our 70 plus locations between the two concepts, that's the number one promotion we have.
If they succeed, the people kind of like, yeah, it's
exactly. Our franchise community are the ones that are hopefully, selling the praises of the business. And obviously not everyone is as successful as some, but the ones who are the most successful, technically become our sales force, and they help us promote the business by being open every day and having great customer service and providing great products and giving a great customer experience. And these days, with all the internet review sites and websites that are out there,
one or two bad reviews will kill you, man.
It will, and you're gonna get it. And a company like Flying Biscuit's been around for 20 years, and clearly 20 years ago there was no internet,
right.
But over the last 5 years, and with the 13 locations, there's thousands and thousands of reviews, and these days, 4 stars, 5 stars, percentage of this, percentage of that, and TripAdvisor and Yelp and Google.
It's a little better.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million things out there, and luckily most of our reviews are very positive, and we track it as a company to see the performance of franchise stores as well.
Yeah, that makes sense for you guys to keep an eye on that. Do you hire that out? Do you have an internal kind of team that works on that, or how does that work?
A little bit of both. I mean, we certainly look at it every day, but then we have what's called the crisis management team, which is an outside company which does it for us. And then with Google these days, you can just, search, there's a way to just have it pop up. So anything that says Flying Biscuit pops up, comes to your inbox every morning. So if, someone got a, bad service or someone was injured at your restaurant, which we've had all in between.
Especially at Monkey Joe's, I'm sure that's.
Yeah, it happens.
More than the Flying Biscuit for injuries.
Exactly.
Anyway.
But you'd be surprised,
slip
and fall gets out there more than, at a restaurant. But, certainly we take it very seriously, and we use our stores as kind of a barometer to see how we're doing as a company. And you can, in the past and still today, you always judge things by sales and by revenues, which is clearly a great indicator. But when you're talking to new prospective franchisees, they usually say, and I usually say to them in the sales process, go look at our reviews, go look online. And fortunately for both of our concepts today, it's very positive.
Absolutely. And so how do you police or help franchises maintain that integrity of good customer service? And do you consult? What services do you offer them?
Absolutely. I mean, we do everything from training, helping them with initial real estate to find locations, helping them operate their business, especially from the beginning. I mean, we're not there holding their hand day one, but the typical franchisee we look for in the Flying Biscuit side is someone who's got some restaurant experience, so they know how to crack an egg and cook an egg. In that example, you'd be surprised how many people don't. and in the Monkey Joe's business, it's a little bit different because there's not a lot of cooking involved. But it's someone who's got that business experience because it's a huge facility. There's a lot of activity. There's a lot of people in there. Some of our facilities, 20,000 feet, big, so it's square feet big, so
right.
It's a big facility, and kids are, you have 2-year-olds to 10-year-olds, so it's a whole gamut plus their parents.
Sure.
So we're constantly, updating them on new innovative ways, to train their employees, new innovative ways and ideas to promote the business with food. It's, we do limited time offers on seasonal items. With Monkey Joe's, it's more of, we'll do specialty days on President's Day or when kids are off from school on a Monday or an election day or whatever it may be, and to be prepared because those days and, you know, over spring break, you're going to be packed. Where you know,
right.
So we're constantly training and constantly, you know, doing webinars and safety things. And, you know, so we're, to answer your question, we're constantly supporting their business and helping them, you know, run better and sharing the best practices of the 60 some odd locations we have.
So you're not just starting them up and saying, okay, you guys are good, now you're gone. It's kind of like, okay, and you do kind of course corrections to keep them on a path that you've obviously consulted and agreed on, right?
Absolutely. I mean, franchising, you know, the larger franchise companies, and I think the more successful franchise companies are giving them kind of the playbook. This is what you need to do. Now, some companies, they see you, we're done. And not that that's good or bad, it's just the way they do it. And other companies are very heavily involved in the constant, you know, you see concepts get renovated. Like, look at what McDonald's just did over the last 5 years. Their stores are beautiful.
Completely
now.
Different.
Completely
right.
Different. And that's someone who came in and said, this is the new way to do it. You know, women and kids and everyone are going to be more impressed with a leather couch and a flat screen TV as opposed to a greasy, slippery brown tile floor.
Plastic.
Exactly.
Bench or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's someone out there, and we do the same thing. We're constantly updating and renovating from look and feel. And then from the foods perspective, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free.
Organic, whatever.
Organic,
right.
Farm to table, you know, all those terms out there. I mean, those things are constantly evolving in the food business. And just look at the Food Network over the last 10 years. Didn't even exist 10 years ago.
Right.
Now there's millions of people watching that and making it part of their lives. And from a Flying Biscuit perspective, we're not the healthiest concept out there. We're just a better breakfast and brunch option. And we feel like we do it in a way that we're kind of, you know, keeping up with the times.
So what are some common pitfalls that you think franchisees or franchise companies that want to start franchising make that you could help them avoid?
Well, I think in any business, whether it's franchise or not, it's location, location, location. We certainly strive to help our franchisees in both of our concepts and all the brands over the years, you know, find a great location from a demographic standpoint, from a visibility standpoint, parking, signage, co-tenants. All those things are really important. So that's usually the first pitfall. You could have the greatest concept in the world and be in a terrible location. You'll probably be okay at the beginning, but, you know, Flying Biscuit's been around for 20 years. The Candle Park location's been open for 20 years. Midtown's been open for 10. Those are great, you know, real estate locations for different reasons. There's no parking at either of them, but from a demographic standpoint, visibility standpoint, and co-tenant standpoint, and Candle Park's in the neighborhood, basically.
Right.
So
no one wants to drive at that point.
You don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to. You go to Candle Park on Saturday and Sunday morning, there's people with baby carriages and bikes walking throughout the neighborhood, especially if, you know, nice weather, which 9 months out of the year it is here.
Right.
So we're certainly – that's the first pitfall, is finding a location. The second, you know, and probably most important along with real estate – is, you know, absentee ownership. I can't tell you how many times, you know, we talk to people about absentee ownership and they say, oh, no, it's going to be fine. I'm going to take care of it. I'll be here every day. I'm going to quit my job. And that ends up not happening, or they lie, which I hate to say it, but they lie.
Yeah.
And those people then wonder, you know, 2-3 years down the road, why aren't I successful? Well, you're
if
still,
you had just listened.
That's a quote.
That's job security for you, though, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It is, but
unfortunately,
I'd rather than be successful. I you know, there's dozens of examples of when we had Moe's years ago, from 2000, 2008. I can't tell you how many people, you know, quit their job, were so excited about the brand, were customers first. They found a great location. They listened to us. And these people had no restaurant experience. We just made it so simple and so easy that they were able to run a business, and they built a second, a third, and a fourth. And it's
been huge.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. We sold that business, you know, over 6 years ago, our company. And I still talk to people who are friends of mine who have 6, 10, 12 units, and they're doing millions of dollars in revenue, and they're still involved. Now they've hired people underneath them, obviously, and they've set up their little company. But I was in New York this past weekend. There's a guy there. He's got 8 Moe's on Long Island. And, you know, he's doing like, you know, $13 million in revenue and making 10% profit, and which may not be great numbers, but at $13 million, 10% profit, and he's paying himself, nothing wrong with that. And he's got all his debt paid off.
Right.
So that makes me feel real
good.
Huge. That they listen.
Yeah.
that they listen. He's still involved every single
day. That's got to be the payoff for you, though, right? I mean, you spend all this time and work getting all this knowledge that you guys have, right? And then you find someone that you think really wants to learn it. And it's got to be a huge emotional payoff when they actually listen, and it pays off and it works for them.
No, it does. And the thing about the franchise business, as with most businesses, it's referrals. So if I get someone in front of him, that particular guy, whether it's Moe's, which it's not anymore, but any other concept that I'm involved with, he's a salesman for me because I started him in the process. I pushed him through the process, and I was always heavily involved because I'm from there. With that particular example of his success. And there's many, many examples in all of the brands that we have. Now, granted, there are some that are not as successful. It's not all their fault. Some of it may be our fault.
You're learning too sometimes, right?
At the beginning. But certainly with a mature brand like the Flying Biscuit, I mean, we've owned that since 2004, and Monkey Joe's about the same time we acquired both of these brands. There were some things that were already set in place that we're still dealing with some of the growing pains 8 years, 9 years, 10 years later.
Right.
Of those things. But most of it is fixable, and we certainly, our job is to
fix
those things.
I was going to ask. I'm sure at some point they try to do this themselves, and it's like someone going to a bad tattoo artist and you go to get it fixed to someone else, and they're like, oh, I can do something with
it. Or a bad haircut.
Exactly. Yeah. So speak to that a little bit and about how maybe people who want a franchise can avoid that problem.
Well, I think the key to franchising and the success of the individual franchisee is that if you have an idea, if you have a concept, or if you want to open up your own burger place, nothing wrong with that, but look at what's out there, especially in a city like Atlanta. I mean, you go to other cities, like especially in the Northeast, New York and Boston, there's a lot of mom and pop stuff that's been there for generations. Hard to compete with that.
Right.
But in a city like Atlanta that's still reasonably new, the reason why the allure for franchise concepts is here is because people are from all over the country, and there's not a lot of staple mom and pop places in burgers, in tacos, in anything. It's all mostly growing companies.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, you want to make sure that at the beginning, if someone wants to start their own thing. It's hard to explain, but if they want to start their own thing, there's nothing wrong with it. But we give them everything. We've made all the mistakes. Whether I have one unit or whether I have 50 units, if Jim Smith comes in and he wants to open up a burger concept, I know all the recipes. I have advantages with the food purveyors. I have advantages with the real estate people and the landlords. I've got 50 stores that are open that can share with Jim Smith best practices of what to do and what not to do in day one, week one, month one, year one, 2 years out, how to promote, how to advertise, how to do specials, couponing, discounting, which is so big these days.
Right.
So the difference is that he could follow our playbook and our guidelines and our rules. And sure, there's some minor things that we want a franchisee to do on their own and kind of create their own local feel to their store, especially, in different markets. But for the most part, there's a core menu. There's a core way to do it. Go follow those rules and then, differentiate a little bit because you want your own personal touch on it. If you do it all by yourself, you have to create recipes or pay someone to do that. You have to decorate. You have to, find vendors who can do graphics and equipment. You have to start new with an insurance company, with a Muzak company.
It can be overwhelming.
It not only is it overwhelming, but you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And then you want to talk about overwhelming. You've spent all this money.
time.
And time. And you get open, and everything's beautiful, but maybe you bought the wrong piece of equipment because you didn't know, because you don't have a food background, or you didn't hire a chef.
Or it looks great, but may not appeal to the right type of people that you want to hit, right?
Exactly. I mean, maybe you're buying the wrong, hamburger patty. Maybe you should have went with, an Angus beef 90-10, and you're just buying the cheapest one because it's a hamburger. What do you care?
Yeah, right.
But that what you
your
like,
customer's going to care.
Exactly. So, and it's advertising, it's promotion, it's PR. Go with a company, franchising is successful because we've already done it. And go with a company that's already done it, and that way your percentage of success is probably a lot higher.
Now, I want to go back a little bit. When did you start this company?
We started, I mean,
it was Big Game Brands when you... You changed the Big Game Brands.
Yeah, but let me go back. I mean, when I got involved with this company, I was actually a franchisee of Planet Smoothie. And this was in 1998.
Yeah.
I don't know how long you've been in Atlanta, but 1998 is when I started as a franchisee.
I remember Planet Smoothies, yeah.
I was started as a franchisee in 98, and I met the founder and chairman of the company because I bought it from him.
Sure.
We did really, really well at my location, and they had some things going on. They were kind of developing a new prototype and a new design, and they said, well, let's use Daryl. He's the guy, so we kind of partnered up together, and they let me buy into the company. We built a bunch of stores. This was 98, 99. Then we had a store in Vinings, Planet Smoothie, that was right next to a little place called Willie's. Everyone knows Willie's here in Atlanta.
Everyone knows Willie's, yeah.
And lines out the door. And
you know, they're printing money over there.
Yeah. My partner and I are like, wow, let's go talk to this guy, you know, because we love this burrito thing. We love to get involved. And this is 99. And, you know, we at that time, we probably had 50 or 75 franchise locations. We knew franchising. He probably had four or five locations at the time. We knew he was growing. It would make sense to partner up. We talked. It didn't work out. And we ended up just doing it on our own without him, which is fine. It happens. And he's been very successful.
Right.
And more power to him. It's fantastic to see what he's done here in Atlanta and around the Southeast. And then we started working on Moe's in the summer of 2000. And it was he and I at the beginning. And he was kind of the money, and I was kind of the brawn, getting everything done. And then we opened up our first store on Peachtree, which is still there, December of 2000. And then it just blew up. It was the right time. Everyone had money.
Right location.
Yeah, right location. There was money flowing. Anyone could go borrow money from a bank with little or no collateral, which is why we are today. But
right.
It's a whole other conversation.
But it worked for you guys.
It worked for us. Right. We were in the right place at the right time. We didn't know. It just, you know, people came in. They had some business experience. They had, you know, $50,000 in their 401k or in cash, and they paid a franchise fee, and boom. They did a store in Canton. They did a store in Charlotte. They did Jacksonville, Orlando. And after about 2 years, we had about 100 locations open. It was unbelievable. We hired a staff of, you know, really people that we knew in the industry. There was like an original six of us that, you know, really started getting the thing going. And I was opening stores. There were certain people training. We had a guy on real estate. We had a guy on finance. We had a guy on construction. So it was like a good six pack of us that, you know, the core company. Then it just blew up. Then we were awarded the Hot Concept Award, Nation's Restaurant News Hot Concept Award, which in the restaurant industry is a pretty big deal in 2004. The press was unbelievable, you know, everywhere. And then, you know, we had all these great real estate opportunities all over the country. So then we created a concept called Mama Foos, Pan-Asian. Still real estate opportunities. Then we created a concept called Doc Green's Soup and Salad. Great real estate opportunities. We just started opening Atlantic Station right here. We had one of each.
Remember
in
Doc
here.
Green's in there?
Yeah, we had Doc Green's. We had Moe's. We had Bonehead's, the seafood concept we created. And it just kept going and going and snowballing. And we couldn't stop. It was unbelievable.
Right.
All along, Moe's is doing great. 200 locations, 250 locations, 10-store deal, 20-store deal. The original guys from Hooters came in. The original guys from Hardee's came in. I mean, just people just writing checks. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And by the time it kind of came to a head, it was 2006. We had six or seven concepts underneath us, including Planet Smoothie. We acquired Monkey Joe's. We acquired Flying Biscuit. We acquired PJ's Coffee out of New Orleans. So we had nine concepts, and then we were raving brands. 2007 came around. We had some legal stuff come up from some franchisees, which has all since been canceled and won, and they sued us. They gave us money because they lost, and crazy stuff, which, again, 2-hour show with that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, it came out that, you know,
that was experience that you gained too that you can take into the next round, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's good and bad because in franchising, it looks bad when you go into the franchise book or the franchise disclosure document, and on page 3, litigation, there's like pages of it. You look at McDonald's, Subway, all the big guys, they've got pages of it too, because when you're a big company, and we were a big company, everybody wants a shot. And they took it and they said, we did this and we did that. And so it turns out we did nothing, right. You know, according to the federal judge downtown, which was an experience.
I'm sure.
It wasn't a great experience, but you know, those guys, they learned their lesson because the Mama Foos guys, they ended up paying us a pretty large sum when it was, you know, counter claims. Anyway, so 2007 came around, and we got approached by a company here in Atlanta called Rourke Capital, Focus Brands, and they wrote a nice check for our company.
You said, sure, here.
And it was great. It was a great experience, and they've taken it to extensive lengths. They've got, I think, almost 600 locations now all over the world, which, very proud. You know, I can still say I'm one of the original founders of that concept. And all the other companies behind it, you know, followed suit. You know, they obviously didn't do that well, but we had, you know, 40, 50 locations of this and 60 locations of Shane's Rib Shack and 100 locations of Planet Smoothie. We've since sold everything except for Flying Biscuit and Monkey Joe's. And then when all the legal stuff came up again, we were like, you know what, we just Raving Brands has got this tainted a little bit. Let's change it to Big Game Brands. And that's where we are today. But people in Atlanta, they hear Raving Brands. They know they're Big Game. Right. They don't know what that is.
It's kind of synonymous to them.
Yeah.
So where do you see you guys going into the future? I know you're focusing on Flying Biscuit and Monkey Joe's. So is that a laser focus for you guys? Are you trying to just build them? Are you trying to take more in? What's your kind of...
Well, we're always trying to grow, you know, internally. Many of our existing franchisees are, you know, looking at doing more stores. Talked to a franchisee in Connecticut for Monkey Joe's. He's looking in New Jersey now. My franchisee in D.C. is looking at another store in Northern Virginia. So we love the fact that we can grow with people who are already in the business, that are operating the business. It makes our lives a lot easier. We're also signing up new people as well and going through the training process of starting from scratch. So it's a little bit of both. It's kind of a hybrid. Flying Biscuit, we also have some new growth here in Atlanta as well. And we're working on an Atlanta airport deal. We're trying to get in there, which would be great for us.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, but it's a little bit slower growth. I mean, it's full-service restaurant. It's a little bit bigger investment.
Okay.
You got to find people who have that experience.
Right.
Whereas with Monkey Joe's, you just need good business-minded people. With Flying Biscuit, you need someone who understands, you know, restaurant operations. So, but to answer your question, yes, we're still growing slowly, slow and steady, and, you know, we're pretty comfortable where we are right now.
Sounds like you guys are doing some great stuff, man.
Thank you.
So I wish you all the best of luck. And thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Hey, how do you feel about hanging out with us?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So next up on the show, we have Stephen Karse with King of Pops, the CEO. Did I pronounce that last name correctly?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. That should have asked before the show. I did. I just rolled the dice, man. Went for it.
Perfect.
So you are the CEO of King of Pops.
Yeah, I guess. We worked on titles this year for the first time. Yeah, so I picked that title, kind of. I'm not set on it.
Do you have him in a hat and you just had to pick it out and you got the CEO?
Yeah, everyone else has fun titles like Sultan of Sales and.
Oh. Now I feel bad
Optimus
for you.
Prime.
Originally, I was like, oh man, he's CEO. That'd be cool. But they were maybe a little more creative.
Yeah, I'm working on it still. Working title.
Still working title.
Yeah.
So you obviously were in the process of starting King of Pops, right?
Yeah, so we started in 2010. I had gotten laid off from AIG in 2009, kind of in the fall, so not an ideal time to start a popsicle company.
Not exactly, but
April comes around, and like everything, there was a lot of problems. I ended up on a cart on a corner selling popsicles, which wasn't my initial plan and vision.
I don't think that was part of the game plan.
It worked out, and I'm very, very happy.
Well, I've had some of your pops, and they're just delicious. So tell me, what prompted you to do popsicles? That seems a little bit off the wall.
Sure. My oldest brother is an anthropologist. All his field work was in Latin America, so Ecuador, Panama. And the summers in college, and even once I got into the corporate world, we would go down there and visit and backpack around. And the paleta, which is basically the Spanish word for popsicle, is a much bigger deal down there. It's made with all fresh fruit, a lot of interesting flavors, and we fell in love with it. Whenever we go down there, we would kind of seek these things out, and after a couple of years, we're like, oh, this would be fun.
You're always on a hunt for the best one, right?
Yeah. We're like, well, let's try this back home someday, and didn't really seem like realistic. Just kind of something you say when you're sitting on the beach and
had
a few drinks or whatever.
Hand. Yeah.
Drink, popsicle, whatever you want. And we get down to... Been doing it for 5 or 6 years, then lose my job, and could have gone back into insurance. And I was like, well, you know, I've got the rest of my life for insurance if this doesn't work out.
Right.
I've always kind of wanted to do my
own thing.
Let's try
this popsicle thing.
So
yeah.
That's how we started.
So you have some pretty crazy flavors. Who comes up with those, and how do you test them and make them? And are you just at home in a blender and in a freezer, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, craziness and funky flavors is all relative. So for me at this point, I'm like, it's not that crazy. But it's just basically trying stuff. Like I said, it was in the winter when I lost my job. So before we had any equipment or anything, I was using the medicine cups, freezing them. It would be like 18 degrees outside, and I'd be forcing pineapple habanero, little ice cubes down my friend's throat. They were kind of tired of it after a while. But now it's just to the point where my brother and I came up with a lot of great flavors in the first year or two. Now we have I'm in there, everyone's in there, and the cost of trying something new is so low, really, for us. So we'll try a flavor, even if half the people like it, half the people don't, we'll put it out there and let Atlanta decide if they like it or not. And
how do you get feedback? What's the best way for people to let
people
you know?
Are pretty honest. I mean,
hell yeah.
When you're not, it's amazing to have when you're outside and not in the typical counter service. People are talking to the people next to them, and they're also just talking to you. You don't really know what side they're coming from. You don't know, kind of got to be on your toes a little bit, but they'll definitely share what they're feeling with you. And then you also just find out by what's selling. I mean, people buy what they like. If they'll come back for it, that's probably the best test. If someone keeps coming back for it, you know, you got a winner.
Then yeah, keep that one on the shelf.
Yeah.
So you're not selling out of a cart anymore.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but not just one.
Oh yeah, we've got several. So we have about, I think this last weekend, Inman Park Festival and all this other stuff, we had about 30 carts out throughout Atlanta. Spring and fall are our biggest seasons, kind of because that's when all the festivals are. But right. We've also expanded. We've got kitchens that do their own thing, deal with their own local produce, kind of run their own business. Not exactly like a franchise. We own it still, but they're
give it a little partners. Leeway.
Yeah, and we have that in Charlotte, Charleston, and Richmond, and then we also kind of just have satellite operations in Athens, Chattanooga, and we just started in Savannah. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. That's super exciting. Savannah is a super cool place for that. So tell me about that expansion process, hiring the right people. I know we talked about that with Daryl, but I mean, that's huge, right?
Yeah, for us, it's been a mix. We've done it wrong and right, and learned along the way. Just as Daryl talked about, I think that's basically what you have to do if you want to be successful. But started out with a buddy that wanted to do it. He wanted to move to Charleston. We were kind of on cloud nine, like didn't really know how this was happening here in Atlanta. And he's like, yeah, we'll just do this in Charleston. It's going to be easy.
Yeah, how hard could it be?
Yeah, so took a few years, but I mean, this last year he won best artisan food product in Charleston, which is like a foodie town, so it's amazing, and they're doing great now. We did it a little different in Charlotte. We had a guy that had kind of been with us a few years in the kitchen and helping run the business, and he went up there and teamed up with someone that was from Charlotte. That's kind of like the model that I think works best, because you've got someone that's familiar with our business and then someone that's familiar with the city. So
yeah, they kind of started out as more kind of like an apprentice and then
sure. Yep.
Then they become the master now.
Exactly.
You like that, Daryl?
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
So what are some big mistakes that you might have made that you would ward people away from? Some just name things you do differently going back, or if you could give yourself some advice, your younger self?
I don't think I would do that much stuff differently. I think we might have waited too long to staff up in some ways. The original core of people, literally, we killed ourselves. Like we were, I think everyone does this, but, and I love it and I wouldn't change anything, but we were working during the season, 7 days a week, 12 to 16 hours a day. And I was physically like taking a toll, like
absolutely.
Dry ice. You don't want to be around as much as I was around it. I learned that. Just being in the sun, my winter weight and my summer weight would fluctuate quite a bit. So I think realizing that sometimes you just have to bring on help. And
right.
You want to do everything yourself, but sometimes you're not the best person to do it. People can tell you that 1,000 times. But,
right.
Until you see it. And now we've got some people in there that are doing things better than I could for specific things.
Sure.
I don't even really know what I do anymore.
I was going to ask. So as the CEO, do you still sell popsicles? What do you do?
Yeah, on Saturdays, I'm usually at North Avenue, North Highland. I like to be out there at least once a day because it's only been 4 years. But for me, it's pretty profound to see like people that were five that are now nine. I don't know. It's like a big life change.
Yeah.
When I started, I just imagined there's this guy that was at that spot before me he was creatively called the flower guy. But he spent about 30 years at that spot.
What did he sell?
Flowers.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, this is going to be me. This is going to be cool. I'll be sitting out here.
Right.
I'm going to know people's families. And I really, really love that part of it. So I hope that I can keep that. And it's just once you know people, they'll be honest with you. They're like, you guys are kind of, this is stupid. Don't do that.
Right.
But then I also, I'm
so you'll kinda bounce ideas off some of your regulars.
Yeah, for sure. And then I kind of more so than anyone else am the culmination of the other cities. So we've had very loose ties, so I'm trying to make the ties. I still want them to be loose. I like them to kind of run their own show, but at least getting everyone on the same page, checking in, making sure that we're not making like what they do. I mean, we don't need to make all the exact same mistakes once we've learned. So try to help with that.
Sure.
I travel once a month. I try to stop in.
So yeah, that's pretty low touch, though. I mean, it's not like you said, pretty loose, but you know. At some point, you got to rein it in if you feel like it's not going the way you need it to go, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, how do you handle that situation?
Do
you just get it out and be blunt? Do you kind of?
Yeah, we're pretty transparent as the whole business. I mean, both internally and to the public, we want everyone to know that I mean, we want to trust them. We want to trust each other. But yeah, I mean, if they're putting out a flavor and we feel like there's a bad review on Yelp,
you don't control the flavors. Like they,
no. Wow, it's their world. So you make suggestions. Really and we share recipes with everyone, and then they come back to us as well. So yeah, it's really we can't. I mean, our business is so fluid. Like the way that we find a location and the way that they find a location is going to be different. The legislation for street food in Savannah is so tight compared to Richmond, where you can just set up anywhere. So there's not a playbook that we can just give to people. There's a lot of advice. We know farmers markets are a great place for us to start. We know that the street food movement is great, but there's not a set plan when we get in. We get in there, we kind of set them loose. They make a ton of mistakes that we could have maybe helped them research, but to be honest, we're all over the place everywhere. I mean, maybe not the most organized business in the world, but working on it.
Well, yeah. Well, so going forward, what are some things that you're trying to change? Maybe some things you're trying to develop. What's your 25-year plan? That's kind of a long question.
Yeah, 25-year. I mean, we actually just worked on this. We had like one of our first higher-level meetings. We're opening a farm this year, so we're going to be growing a lot of our own produce.
Super fresh now.
Yeah, we want to be a lot more active, and we use a ton of organic. We use mostly local fruit now, but we just want to be a more active member of the community.
Gives you more control of your product too, right?
Yeah. And we want to be seen as kind of like a beacon for that. And so that's a big goal. We might have moved too fast into some new markets. We kind of want to make sure that we are making money in all these places before we open any other ones. I mean, they're not losing money, but it's not the same. It doesn't have the same vibe in all the cities it has in Atlanta. And that might not be replicable. I mean,
sure.
We're kind of like Atlanta's baby in some ways, and we owe all of our success to them and the people that came on and kind of made us who we are. So I don't know that it can happen in all the cities, but hopefully it can. I don't know.
There's only one way to find out, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. So I got to ask, what's your favorite flavor?
I'll say one, just because when you ask me the movie question, you just have to pick. Banana pudding is my favorite flavor.
Banana pudding.
If it's a hot day, I'm going to go with tangerine basil.
Tangerine basil. I'll have to try that one.
Yeah.
I'm not too brave in that those kind of things. I need to change that.
Yeah, it's good. You should try it.
I will. Any new flavors come through the pipeline we need to keep our eyes open for, or is that you keeping that close to the chest?
Nothing's close to the chest, but we probably come up with about 5 new flavors a week. So
wow.
Let's see.
What's the shelf life on those things? I mean, like, how often do you keep a flavor rotated out? Is it like seasonal? Like,
yeah, very seasonal. We try to whatever produce is available, then that's what we'll use. So we can't get peaches right now. That's one of people's favorite flavors, is just the fresh peach. But shelf life, we like to move everything for our carts within a week or two. For wholesale, it usually takes about a month.
Sure. So,
but it's fine. I mean, as far as being a wholesome product, it's going to be fine as long as it's frozen. But as far as best quality, I like to move it in under a month. Yeah.
Yeah, but the flavors are constantly changing. Yep. So, I mean, and it may not be same year to year. It just depends on whatever you guys kind of feel like making, huh?
It's just whatever happens. Like, for example, limes right now are about 12 times higher than they normally are, $140 a case instead of like 12.
Right.
So we're lucky in the fact that we can kind of shift our focus away from limes a little bit. Maybe there's more lemon flavors now.
That's right.
But we have raspberry lime, which is a wholesale flavor, so we always make it. But and then the same thing with, like, man, these peaches are amazing this year. We're going to make a lot more peach stuff. Or the strawberry crop's not that good this year. We're going to do more with blueberries and blackberries. And we like to taste things. And even with recipes, like, you can't go straight off a recipe with what we're doing, because fruit isn't even consistent. Like, you can have some blueberries from South Georgia that might be amazing, and then get some from Guatemala that don't have as much flavor. So always tinkering.
Always tinkering.
Yeah.
But that's good, though. I mean, that's the way to grow and to change. And sounds like it's working for you guys.
Seemingly.
We'll find out, right?
Yeah, we'll find out. I'm excited for after we have the amount of experience they have. I can't wait to see how many twists and turns and stories there will be, because in 4 years, it seems like it's hard to keep up. So
we know how to get that experience.
Wait for time to pass.
Hire them, too.
Yeah.
You could.
We could. I don't know.
It's not like you kind of got a way that's working for you guys. I mean,
it's working for us. Yeah, right. It's definitely working for us. And I think that, I think that we could definitely learn a lot organizationally from a lot of people. I don't know if it's the right move or not. Like, our company culture, we feel like
right.
is something that's
huge,
very
though.
Important, and we've yeah. worked on it very, very hard. And as you grow, even I feel like we've lost some of what we started with and trying to get that back, but just a process, I guess.
It's always a process.
Yeah.
Well, appreciate you coming to the show,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, for sure.
Good luck, man.
Thank
I'm
you.
Going to King Pops when the sun comes back out. I know it's kind of
yeah,
rainy right
this
now,
weekend.
But yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for coming to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Great having you guys in here.
Thanks.
All right. That's it for Startopia Radio. I'm Michael Lauer. Thanks for listening.